Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Blue Apocalypse by E.E. Isherwood and Craig Martell. Narrated by Gabriel Vaughn. Chapter 1. 11 a.m. PST. August 1st, 2020. Modesto, California. Writing a letter to your girlfriend? Buck smiled at the young server working him for a better tip before he'd even ordered. No, ma'am, I wish. He chuckled and shook his head. I'm just doodling in my comic book.
Looks like a trucker's federal logbook.
Her bright eyes sparkled with her smile. Buck was old enough to be her father, but he understood. It was part of the game, and she was a master player. He bowed out of the contest early. How about a burger and fries? She nodded. And a Dr. Schnee.
We don't have anything like that, unless you mean a Dr. Pepper.
She wrote DP without waiting for his answer.
That stuff will kill you.
Eventually. It's a guilty pleasure, but everything in moderation. Buck had been driving semis for almost 10 years. On one of his first solo trips, he stopped at a truck stop on a pull between Indianapolis and Kansas City and had a Dr. Schnee. He'd never heard of it before, and he hadn't found it since. Still, he wasn't one to give up on a good beverage, so he kept up his search. She tucked her order pad in her apron and walked to another table. It was the same dance he'd fumbled through at countless other diners and bars over the years. For the millionth time, he cursed his luck at being blessed with his father's good looks, but socked with his mother's introversion. Sometimes he wished it had been the opposite. He sighed and shut his logbook. With plenty of sleep under his belt, he was stoked to get on the road and head back east. Under Uncle Sam's rules, he could drive for 11 hours today. If he put the hammer down, he'd make it to Salt Lake City before he ran out the clock. Buck fingered the edges of his road atlas, even though he already knew the route, so he pulled out his phone instead. The shiny black device sported a tiny slide-out keyboard and an even smaller view screen. His son's face beamed out, which caused him to get lost in thought for a few minutes.
"Oh, he's a cutie," the server said in a bubbly voice while sliding a burger in front of him.
Buck slowly shook his head. They need to put a bell on you. She harumphed and put the Dr. Pepper on the other side of the table from his logbook. She pulled a ketchup bottle from the next table and plopped it next to the plate with the burger. Buck closed his eyes and fully inhaled the burger's aroma. It made his mouth water. Schnees weren't his only guilty pleasure. He wondered if it tasted as good as it smelled. When he opened his eyes, he found the young woman's face too close as she peered at his phone.
Your brother? She ventured.
The dance. Here you go. He handed her a 20 on a $15 bill. Keep the change. She shrugged and strolled away, the 20 disappearing as if by magic. I'm coming for you, Garth, Buck told the picture. I need to tell you I'm sorry, and then I need to take you camping. Fish for our dinner. All that good stuff that I don't get to do enough of with you. 2 p.m. EST. LaGuardia Airport, New York City, New York.
I dare you to call that number.
Dude, are you crazy?
Garth elbowed his best friend, Sam. They sat in the back of a New York City transit bus, studiously examining the scrawl penned into the seat back in front of them. Someone had etched, "Call Mona for God Tim in the leather."
I bet it's a smoking hot girl, Sam asserted. Probably Puerto Rican with Mamma Mia legs.
Garth knew his buddy wasn't going to let it go. They'd spent most of the morning living inside a running joke with Cologne, so a prank call would only continue his friend's fun. It was his job to talk him down from taking things too far.
It is more likely a 400-pound shut-in named Klaus. Who wants to have a God Tim anyway?
Ha! Then how did he get all the way out here to write this?
Sam elbowed him back. Garth slowly shook his head. It was an affectation he'd picked up from his father.
The 15-year-old had needed the gesture many times over the years when he was around his wiry best friend. He lived with Sam and his parents while Garth's dad was on the road.
Just call it then.
Sam seemed surprised.
No, I dared you to call it.
They'd come off the subway line near the airport, but for some reason, they had to take a regular bus the last 2 miles. It gave them plenty of time to stir up trouble. He had his friend trapped.
I'll read the number, you put it in your phone.
Sam already had his phone in his hands, so Garth read off the numbers.
You don't think I will, Sam said with bravado. I swear I'm not afraid to do it.
Sam put the number in his phone, but Garth didn't really want him to call it, so he backed off.
We're almost there. Put your phone away. For now.
Sam hesitated.
Seriously?
Garth pressed.
Fine.
Sam shoved the phone in his pocket like he'd been given the worst news in the world.
But I have the number for when we're ready to talk to Mona.
He said the name with a suitable moan. Garth laughed at his friend. He had no doubt in his mind the call would get made. Sam was fearless when it came to girls, even fake ones who put their numbers on random seats. The two of them scrambled down the steps of the bus and trotted into the main terminal. Sam was evidently a veteran traveler because he knew exactly where to go, at least until they reached the baggage screening area. Garth led them up to a bored-looking security woman guarding a little podium.
Need to see ID and your tickets, boys.
We're 15. We don't have ID.
Garth felt stupid for not knowing there would be paperwork involved at the airport.
Do you at least have tickets?
She turned up her nose like he was an unwashed vagrant. Garth shrugged and motioned to Sam.
We're here to see his parents.
He turned around to get Sam to back him up, but the asshole had fast-walked to a distant corner where he'd tried to blend in with his fellow travelers.
Looks like your friend ditched you, the TSA worker said dryly. You might want to take a shower. Next.
Garth marched to his friend and clocked him in the shoulder with a right hook.
You are such an ass shovel.
Sam feigned pain at the shot, but snort laughed while trying to hold it back.
You looked like such a fool in front of all those people. How do you not know about the TSA Gestapo? You can't flush a urinal at the airport without your papers.
Garth and Sam traveled all over the city on their outings, but he didn't want to admit it was his first time at an airport if Sam hadn't already figured it out.
I thought all we had to do was prove we were there to pick someone up.
After brushing his blonde bangs from his eyes, Sam turned to what was important.
Did she get a whiff of your cost-cutter perfume?
He snickered some more. Garth nodded heavily.
Yeah, this stuff is starting to make me sick. I saw her squinch up her nose like you'd dropped a deuce right in front of her. That was an added bonus.
Sam waited to see if Garth was going to reply, but then kept talking.
All right, we'll have to wait. I like to watch planes land until Mom and Dad show up. They should be landing right now.
He strode off, but glanced over his shoulder.
Come on, noob.
I'm not a noob, Garth answered.
There were few insults greater than being told you weren't an expert at something. They used it a lot when they played video games, but it never rose to the level of bother he felt at that moment. He prided himself on being prepared for the real world and knowing what was going on around him. Sam had used that pride to play up his joke. They knew each other too well. Sam rushed to the waiting area and plopped into a seat. The floor-to-ceiling windows along the terminal wall gave them a perfect view of the runways. It would have been a great place to wait in peace, except for their never-ending joke with the cologne.
You had to sit there?
Garth pointed nearby because his buddy sat in the middle seat of a three-chair row. There were no other chairs in the vicinity.
Where else would I go? Sam said matter-of-factly. This window has these nice, comfy chairs. We're lucky no one was here.
Yeah, I see that, but why did you sit in the middle? Take one of the ends, you jackass, so I don't have to sit next to your nasty cologne.
Today, they both doused themselves with the cheapest, most off-brand colognes they could buy while in the city, not to impress girls, but to stink each other out. Garth's reminded him of a flower that had been tossed into a porta-potty. Sam's was worse. They played dumb when people acted like someone farted on the subway, but they laughed uproariously once they were clear. It was probably why no one sat near them on the bus, too. Sam slid over to the end.
Yeah, good point. I don't want to smell you for another second either.
Garth got in the seat, slid up against the back, and finally relaxed. After a long weekend of being alone with Sam, he was ready for his friend's parents to get back from Chicago. If there was one thing he'd learned in the experience, it was that he couldn't leave Sam alone for any length of time, or he'd get into some kind of trouble. Having his parents back would finally give Garth a break from keeping an eye on him.
I wonder when my dad is coming home,
he thought, repeating the question that was always at the back of his mind. They'd been angry when he last drove off. There was no reason for it. He opened his phone, thought about sending a text, but stopped when he caught Sam watching him. The airport was super busy. In the few moments they watched, numerous planes maneuvered on the runways and tarmacs around the terminals. It fascinated him to see the different colors and sizes of planes. A jumbo jet sat not far away, almost blocking his view. The Korean logo made it seem exotic, even as the plane blended into its bland surroundings.
We shouldn't have long to wait. My parents will run right over here when they get to this terminal. They've probably been worried sick about me.
He paused and looked over to Garth with his trademark smirk.
And you, I suppose.
He could appreciate their concern. If anything, his parents had been irresponsible to leave Sam by himself, although Garth wondered if they counted on him to be their kid's babysitter. If so, the joke was on them. Pouring whole bottles of craptastic colognes on themselves was anything but responsible.
Yeah, I...
Garth tried to respond, but a brilliant flash of blue light caught his eye. It traveled from one side of the skyline to the other with the speed of lightning, from west to east. In a flash, it was gone.
Holy shit! Sam pointed outside. Yeah, holy shit!
Garth replied with wonder. Modesto, California. Lunch was exactly what Buck thought it would be. The burger didn't taste as good as it smelled. The fries had been under the heat lamp for too long. Salt shakers and ketchup bottles that looked like they'd served hard time in an elementary school cafeteria. Buzzing flies added that extra ambiance he always looked for in eateries. At least it was cheap and fast. He wasn't getting any closer to home waiting for his food to digest. Buck gathered his things and went out the door the instant he got the text that said his load was ready. The fresh California air made him a bit lightheaded after being in the stuffy diner. The sounds of trucks greeted him. 100 tractor trailers working the low gears nearby signaled his return to the job he loved and the world he understood. It paid the bills and allowed him to see the country. He strode across the parking lot of the giant shipping company, careful to avoid the many rigs pulling in and out. The atlas and logbook were under his left arm, and he carried the Dr. Pepper cup like it was precious cargo. It was so hot on the short walk, he'd already taken a few swigs, but he'd intended to save it, so he'd have something to suck back while on the road. A gleam of silver caught his eye on the dark asphalt ahead. When he got close, he couldn't believe his luck.
Bingo, Buck, he said to himself.
He squatted down to pick up the quarter.
A centennial. Must be my lucky day.
The 1976 quarter wasn't worth much more than 25 cents, but he collected the special quarters because they meant something to him. Since he did so much travel and spent tons of cash in the eateries across America, he figured he'd collected hundreds of them. On a whim, he flicked the quarter up in the air like the coin toss at a football game.
Heads I win, tails you lose.
While the coin was mid-air, a sapphire-blue wave of light darted across the sky from out of the east. It was impossible to miss, even in the bright light of the morning.
What the fuck?
The coin flipped through the air, forgotten, as Buck blinked the flash from his eyes. Chapter 2. Air Blue Flight 586, flying at 8,000 feet over LaGuardia Airport.
What is that?
Captain Cody Alderbrook watched as a blue light shot across the sky above their Bombardier CRJ-1000 aircraft. Charles, his co-pilot, strained to see the phenomenon out his side window.
No idea. Oh boy, is it moving like a gunshot?
Call it in, the pilot ordered calmly. They were already holding at 8,000 feet over LaGuardia's air traffic control tower, waiting for a runway to open up, so he needed to know if a meteorological condition was going to screw with his arrival time.
Aye.
Charles flicked on the VHF transmitter. Tower, this is Air Blue 586. The LaGuardia tower replied immediately. Go ahead, 586.
Hey, we're seeing some weird weather up here. Can you confirm?
He didn't see where the blue wave of light had come from, but it headed out over the distant horizon of the Atlantic Ocean. Cody guessed it moved at several times the speed of sound. He thought it might have been a shockwave from a meteor. 586, we have no unusual activity on our end.
Wait one.
A blue arc of electricity erupted from the plane's dashboard and passed the air crew.
Tower, this is 586, Cody tried to say.
The plane nosed downward like the aircraft had fallen off a cliff. The airframe rattled so violently he thought his teeth would shatter. His harness held him to the back of his chair while the rest of the plane went vertical. While his heart tried to jettison from his chest, he remained steady on the outside. 98 passengers depended on what he did next. Cody jammed the throttles forward while pulling the yoke back.
Power up!
The twin engines responded with a roar, and the nose of the plane reluctantly lifted. The shaking stopped somewhere along the 1,000-foot descent. The control board shimmied with blue energy. They stared at it, expecting a catastrophic failure.
Tell me that was turbulence, Cody croaked when the worst didn't materialize.
Charles's hat had flown from his head and was wedged against the front window. That was a first.
I don't know, the co-pilot responded in a deliberate voice.
And that blue crap?
Cody added.
I don't know. These are fried, though.
The co-pilot pointed to the altimeter and airspeed dials in the middle of the dashboard. Both dials were frozen in place. Cody watched the controls while mentally running through the oft-drilled emergency flight procedures. He decided what needed his attention when they were once again flying level. He picked up the mic to speak to the back.
This is Captain Cody. We've hit a bit of turbulence.
He forced a chuckle because it was proven to calm the nerves of the customers, but more importantly, it soothed his flight crew.
But it looks like we're in the clear.
He got off the line just as multiple audible alarms came on.
What now? He mumbled.
The captain was ready to play the part of the hero, but his blood froze in his veins when all the noises and lights went out.
What the?
He blurted. The alarms were off, but so was everything else. The entire plane had lost power. For one surreal moment, Cody and his co-pilot sat in perfect silence. Then the screams began. LaGuardia Airport, New York City, New York. Garth jumped out of his chair and pointed outside.
Did you see that?
The blue light had already faded, so he pointed up into the empty skies.
Sure I did. Must have been a supersonic plane or whatever. I've seen videos of fighter jets breaking the sound barrier.
Garth turned back and brushed through his unkempt hair.
I didn't see a plane.
Sam snickered.
You're at an airport, dude. Look around.
He briefly thought of fishing trips with his father, They used to spend a lot of weekends out in the country, sitting in their John boat, with two lines over the side. His dad would point to the sky and pick out cool planes. He'd never seen anything like the blue light on any of those trips.
Well, I don't think it was a plane. It was weird.
Yeah, okay, Nancy. Don't be scared.
I'm not scared, Garth shot back, not sure why he took such offense.
Sam seemed to study him before speaking.
Look, I know just what can fix you.
He hopped up and began walking. He didn't even look back.
Fine.
Garth caught up to Sam, who started talking.
It was probably just moon dust or sun rays or whatever bullshit they taught us in Roper's science class.
That's your answer? Garth laughed. You didn't pay much attention to Roper, did you?
Who needs science when you have a whole world to explore?
Sam seemed lost for a few seconds, but then adjusted his course toward a less crowded portion of the busy terminal.
That's kind of the point of science, Garth said in a conciliatory voice.
They soon stood at the sealed doors of an elevator.
Why are we here? Aren't we going to miss your parents?
Sam pressed the button and the door opened a few seconds later. He walked in like it was part of his plan. Garth hated to be led around not knowing what was going to happen next, but that was how Sam lived his life.
Entrare, Sam said in a fake French accent.
When the doors shut, someone started to sneeze, and it wasn't either of them. Garth leaned around Sam to see a gray-haired man and woman standing way back in the corner. He'd been so busy managing Sam, he failed to notice them. He smiled at the couple to be polite.
Going up, Sam said nonchalantly.
It was a 15-second ride, but the woman sneezed a few more times on the way. When the doors opened, they all moved forward, but the woman shoved Garth to push past him. Sam cracked up laughing at full volume as the boys got some distance from the older people.
You needed a good laugh, he said in a not-so-quiet voice. My wife is very allergic to perfume, the old guy said over his shoulder.
Oh, shit, Garth said as he realized they'd just trapped the couple inside the enclosed space with their smelly colognes. Between the blue light and becoming mostly immune to the stinky cloud they carried everywhere, he didn't realize how bad it would smell in there.
Sorry, Garth yelled back. Really?
Sam was still laughing when they reached the ticketing area of the terminal.
That was a dick move, Sam.
His friend's shoulders slumped.
Yeah, maybe. I didn't mean to hurt anybody. How was I supposed to know they'd be allergic?
Look, we shouldn't be screwing around. I want to find your parents and get out of here.
Ah, yeah. That's why I brought you up here. See?
Sam started toward a giant billboard showing hundreds of arrival and departure times. Garth was happy to be moving in the right direction, but he soon stopped in his tracks.
Whoa, that's amazing.
It was Garth's turn to indulge as he zigzagged through slow-moving travelers and around the ticket counters, until he stood at another set of windows. With an elevated view, they saw over the landing strips to the large island in the middle of the East River.
Yeah, that's Riker's Island, I think, Sam said with little interest. A huge jail is out there.
Squat gray buildings and numerous parking lots dotted the island, making it easy to believe as a correctional facility.
That's pretty sweet, Garth went on. A prison. Right here in the city. Yep, a real happening place. Everyone wants to live there. Maybe they can move the entire city inside and we'd have one big happy party. Come on, let's go. You're the one who said we shouldn't screw around.
Yeah, okay, Garth answered distantly. Could the whole city's population fit on an island that small? That was the type of science and math he enjoyed, but it wasn't what they taught in school. Maybe it was worth looking up on his phone while Sam's parents drove them back home. He was going to follow Sam, but he caught sight of a black dot in the air. It fell straight down, like it had been dropped from miles above.
Hey, there's a...
He quickly glanced toward Sam, but he was already halfway to the billboard.
By the time he looked up again, the winged dot was almost to the runway. Modesto, California. Buck jogged into the shipping terminal, expecting the place to be going crazy with talk about the blue light. But when he got inside, there was only the normal hustle of truckers and shippers trying to get product to market.
Maybe I'm overreacting.
Rows of garage doors along the outer walls of the stadium-sized facility gave the dock workers access to trailers. Pallet loaders and forklifts skidded back and forth to fill them up. His own rig was about 200 yards away, not even halfway to the other end. All of it was exceedingly ordinary.
Definitely overreacting.
Still, he wanted to check on Garth before hitting the trail, so he pulled out his phone and opened his contacts. There were only a few numbers programmed into it, so it was a snap for him to get to the one he wanted. He mashed the device against his head to drown out the noise of the warehouse.
Come on, son, pick it up, he said under his breath.
They had an agreement about using phones. Buck insisted that no matter what else was going on, Garth had to pick up any time he got a call from his dad. Buck thought that was reasonable. Naturally, teenaged Garth believed it was a death sentence of inconvenience. His son's number rang with a hollow echo in the line that made it sound distant. After about 5 rings, the noise changed to a series of clicks, like someone was dialing using a rotary phone. The connection died after a few seconds of that.
What the hell? Something is wrong.
He called again, and the ringing was normal.
Damn, I'm being stupid. Pick up.
He tried to imagine where Garth was at that moment. His boy had sent a text saying he and Sam were almost at the airport, but he provided no updates.
They should have collected Sam's parents and been heading home already.
Garth didn't pick up, but it did go to his voicemail. Yo, this is Garth. Drop those digits and I'll get back to you. Buck hated how fake he sounded, but it had been explained to him that it was how the kids talked these days. He took a deep, mind-clearing breath. His anxiety had gone back and forth in the last few minutes. The blue light might have been a nothing burger, but he needed to hear his son's voice. However, he couldn't sound panicky and uncertain, especially on voicemail, or he could inject fear where none belonged.
Hello, son. I'm, almost loaded here in Modesto, California, and I'll be mobile within the hour. I just got done eating another crappy meal.
He chuckled.
You would have hated it. Lots of pickles involved, and the patty was as dry as tree bark.
Buck considered whether to mention the blue light, but in that brief decision loop, he decided against it. Whatever it was in the sky, it only lasted a couple of seconds, and nothing had come of it. The dock workers doing their normal routines proved that.
Anyway, I'm looking forward to seeing you at the end of the week. I know we haven't been fishing in a while. What do you say we pull the old boat out of storage and find a quiet lake? I would really like that.
Even thinking about it made him happy.
Love you, kid. Be home soon.
He hung up and felt much better.
NORAD, Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado.
What the fuck just happened?
General Obadiah Obi-Wan Smith had spilled coffee on his leg, but that was only a small part of what made him angry. The lights were not supposed to go out in the bunker. Ever. He'd personally witnessed a total power shutdown for a full second. Every light, every computer screen, every phone charger, out.
Checking!
Several subordinates shouted from the control room.
I better have a goddamned answer in 60 seconds or heads are going to roll.
His mind rubber-banded to a series of impossibilities.
A nuke could have gone off nearby. If it was big enough, that might shut us down. Hackers could have found a way in. I'm not saying it was aliens, but...
Nothing could touch NORAD and not leave evidence. He had to know what it was, no matter how impossible.
The life of every American citizen could depend on the answer he got in the next 52 seconds.
"Warm up the red phone," he said, without
sample complete. Ready to continue?